Test. Okay. Welcome to the Bad Apples, episode 14. I have Gort almost live right here in the studio. This is our first official live show, Gort. It's very exciting. Great to have you actually here, away from the control center that you're usually in. And today, what are we talking about? We're talking about a little bit about networking, talking about some of the newest Apple goings-ons, and I think we're going to talk a little bit about one of those other OS manufacturers out there. I won't say which one. I think I'll leave that for a little bit later. So, Gort, have you been to the Apple site lately?
I actually just went there today, and I was impressed and shocked and amazed to see the selection of new hardware and software.
Yeah, well, the hardware, I think, is just a precursor, you know, of what's to come later on with Leopard. I didn't really see any major upgrades. It's just kind of some, you know, a little bit more CPU, a little bit more storage, new design on the exterior, but I'm hoping that come Leopard, there'll be some bigger, more exciting change on the insides of those machines. But what was really cool, I thought, what I'm excited about, strangely enough, is iWork 08.
Well, that's interesting indeed, because, you know, iWork, when it first came out, to tell you the truth, I just was not impressed. I just had, it was like real programming light. I was disappointed that the features weren't as robust as I had hoped for. And I got the feeling I was using like a stale version of Microsoft Works or something. And I really expected more from Apple. I hate to bash them too hard, but
no,
gosh.
Yeah, no, I agree. iWork 05, yeah, it was almost unusable, actually. I was using Apple Works rather than going to iWork at all back then.
Yeah.
Pages had the word processing, and it also had the layout, the page layout. They were completely unseparated. If you wanted to drag an image into Pages, half of the time it would be dumped into your text field as a text object. It wouldn't be a free-floating object. It was just terrible.
And that that speaks of a lack of control. And when you're doing those kind of documents, first of all, if you need to put graphics inside of a text document, you've got to have control over both.
Well,
you've got to have options.
Yeah, no, I think they're fixing that, from what I understand, in the new version, which is very exciting. They're separating the word processing from the layout. And they've also got a new program, which they're calling Numbers, which is their spreadsheet application.
Oh.
Yeah, it's going to be really cool. It's finally my way out of Excel.
Well, that's very good. I hope they've included some of the standard features that most folks that use the other program. Well, actually, there's two other programs. Microsoft isn't the only game in town, in spite of what they would like you to believe. There's another fine company out there called Mariner, and they have been making Apple-only products for a good number of years now. And one of the items they made was the standalone calc or spreadsheet program, and it had most of what you wanted, but there were still a few features that were lacking. And anybody that works with Excel for a living has come to use quite frequently, and they're good at it to the point where they don't use a mouse even. They're just using keyboard commands, and their fingers fly, and, you know, numbers get inputted and get distributed where they need to go. Cell construction and the whole layout of the spreadsheet happens with nary a move of the mouse. And
wow.
And these features were not fully implemented or included in Mariner. Now, in Mariner's defense, they said, right up front in their advertising, this is not your all-powerful, do-everything spreadsheet. This is for the average, everyday user that needs to run some numbers and get some predictions and maybe figure out how their mortgage is going to play out over the course of 20 or 30 years. Or maybe to do some investment planning light. But if you're going to do anything really complicated and do interactive and connected, linked kind of stuff, then you have to go to the other one. So somewhere in between those two extremes, I hope, and I guess we'll get to find out later, if iWork has incorporated the right mix and kind of a balance between the high-end features and the light features.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm going to be one of the people to get that program. It's available online right now, but I'm just going to go probably on Friday. I'll stop by the Apple store and pick up a copy, and I'll let you know how it is, and maybe we can revisit this topic a little bit later on a different show. But I'm hoping, I mean, for numbers, for me, I'm using it a lot. For Final Cut, I have to enter video data into spreadsheets a lot. And so far, I'm using Neo Office, the Open Office port over to Mac for my spreadsheet. But even that will not export data into a tab-delimited format.
Oh.
Yeah, and that's what I need. I need tab-delimited. And the only spreadsheet I've found so far that will do that is Excel. So I'm hoping that Numbers will let me do that. And if it does, if it can do that, that will be the finishing, that will finish off Office for me. And I promise I will bury the Microsoft Office disk that I have in my front yard if iWork works for me, really.
Well, you may recall some number of years ago I was back in the network room in the old...
Well, I remember a secluded room that no one was ever allowed to go into, and there was always a gentle hum emanating from it.
There was a network back there, and it had, at various times, a mixture of PC boxes and no less than five Apple boxes running a variety of software, and one of those Apple machines was an absolute Microsoft free zone.
Oh yeah, that's a great thing to be able to say.
And it was just a pleasure to use the things that always worked in such a predictable and consistent fashion without concern for the blue screen of death.
Right.
Just didn't happen.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. I mean, and so far, Office is the only remaining vestigial of Microsoft on any computer that I have, and the sooner I can get it off, the better I'll feel about it. You know, it's a funny thing, and it's a true story, and I know that this is an isolated incident, maybe, and I don't want to sound like I'm making a generalization or anything, but a person came to me, they know I know Macs. And amazingly enough, there was a little strange bug or virus in their system, and they were like, hey, there's no such thing as a virus for Mac, whatever. Turns out that the virus was actually, I mean, it was on her Mac, but it was actually just a Word virus that someone had written into a macro, and her Word would just not function properly. And it just struck me that the one virus that actually ran on a Mac was entirely self-contained in the Microsoft environment. And it was just, it was really strange and funny and just, I don't know, almost like I made it up, you know? But it was true.
The truth is stranger than fiction sometimes.
The other, I guess, big new thing from Apple that everyone's talking about, and I don't even want to talk about it too much, is Leopard. I mean, I'm so happy with Tiger that I don't even know what to think about Leopard. I mean... You know, I don't really think I have any great expectations. I mean, I mean, obviously it's going to be a nice, solid OS. And I don't, you know, I mean, it's going to have some cool little features, and I do like some of the new looks and things like that. But one of the big deals about Leopard is the virtual screens.
Uh-huh.
I think they call it Spaces. And This allows you to, for instance, maybe I'm working in Final Cut Pro, and then I need to kind of move all of that aside and go out to my spreadsheet application, hopefully Numbers, to enter some data. Well, in the past, you'd hit Apple H and hide Final Cut, and then you'd bring up Numbers, and you would do your data entry or whatever, and then you'd go back to Final Cut, things like that. And that was great, and that's neat. But what Spaces allows you to do is just have certain applications on one desktop, and then you can switch over to another virtual desktop and have a whole different set of applications open there waiting for you to work on them.
Oh.
So it lets you really divide up your workflow.
That reminds me of a very old program back in the 6.0 days.
Really?
Yes. It used to be one of the desktop assistants, and you would have the appearance of running several different Macs on one machine.
Right.
And it's just as you described, that you'd have the various whole containerized space, as it were, dedicated to one particular program. Then you switch between the programs. Probably not as smooth as I would envision today's software handling it, but the concept is there, and once again refined very carefully for today's sophisticated user.
Yeah, well, and once again, it really does seem like Apple had it right back in, like, what, 85 or 86 or 84?
Yeah.
And they just
kind
of had to, like, weed out certain things because they just weren't, either they weren't there yet or the technology wasn't there yet, and kind of wait for it to all be able to really, really function.
I think they recognized early on that while some things could be done, it was a question of whether or not they should be done, simply because if they piled all that stuff in there as part of the operating system, it would bog down the processors of the day. That would make them next to unusable.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I really think people have to step back sometimes and realize where computers really are at any given stage, because there's just so much excitement about the next big thing, and I think we've always been conditioned to think that computers are just, they're capable of anything.
Well, another thing I've noticed about the use of computers in general is that, and I work in an environment where I get to see a lot of different users across several similar but different tasks. One group of people will use a database program nearly exclusively, and another work team will use a spreadsheet almost exclusively. Everybody seems to use the word processing to some extent, and that's pretty much a standard in every install. But, you know, and they've come up with these the hardware solutions called thin clients.
Right.
And really what they are is just a very stupid standalone computer. By stupid, I mean it's just, you know, low capacity and reasonably efficient processor power, but, you know, it's just not the fastest thing in the world, and it's got enough memory to take care of things and a little bit of a hard drive, mostly just to hold the OS and some local files you might need. But primarily, its really big job is to do what terminals used to do 25 years ago, and that's just to talk to the network, which has become the distributed mainframe of today's age. So people are using applications off of a distributed network, and they're saving their files back to this network. To reside on the company server, the enterprise server somewhere. There's very little that happens on the person's computer except for the input-output, maybe the assembly of some information, and then finally that product is saved away, saved back into an enterprise computing system somewhere.
Yeah, which is a really actually efficient way to to distribute older processors, because you can use computers that are 3 years old, because they're not doing much of the computing, actually. The server is, right?
Right, right. And it's a lot cheaper for a company to upgrade a server room than it is the hundreds or possibly thousands of people that may be part of the workforce.
Not even to mention the system administrator's job of trying to upgrade each and every computer on, you know, if you were to upgrade all of those computers, you'd have to image those drives, and that can be a monumental task. Whereas if you're just doing a server with, you know, you have most of the software kind of consolidated more or less.
Indeed. And oh boy, that brings me to the operating systems. And if they keep changing at a rate where companies can't possibly deploy them, there's going to be very slow or very little movement in the enterprise world about upgrading desktop OSs.
Right. And are we talking about a particular OS when we say that a new one came out that no one could use for a while?
Well, we might be alluding to that, yes.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of a bummer when someone just releases something without any thought of any kind of hardware backward compatibility.
Oh, I tell you. And I've got some IT friends who are really upset about it, and they are dreading the day when their company actually has to make the move. And I say has to or must make the move, because there comes a time when Microsoft says, we no longer support the OS that is distributed throughout your 1,200-person workforce.
Right.
And your 1,200 computers and your enterprise network. It just simply dries up and goes away.
Wow.
And they say, well, if you'd kept up with the latest, you would you'd be supported. But
yeah,
there's something intrinsically wrong with that thought.
I have, you know, a collection of Macintoshes that move in and out of my apartment. Some of them very old, and almost anything I put Tiger onto, Tiger actually runs better in some cases than the original OS that came on the computer. You know, I mean, it's just a fantastic OS. It treats the system really, really well, and I've been really, really happy with it. And it's just been really cool. I mean, Macs have a great staying power, and their OSs are written with that in mind, you know, that you can keep using these things.
You know, the curious thing is, one of the fellows I was talking to at length regarding this, and he knows I'm a Mac man, and he says, you know, you Mac guys, you just really burn me up.
Yeah.
I said, well, why is that? Because you've been doing this stuff since the late 80s or the mid 80s. And you know, when that Macintosh stuff first came out, I was just so angry with it. I said, well, I can't imagine why you'd be angry with it. It was everything that any computer user would hope for, in that it was visual and therefore maybe a little more understandable. There wasn't a lot of command junk you had to remember. You just drag and drop. He says, yeah, that's why I hated it. I couldn't be special anymore. Everybody could do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the other thing was of course, you know, several years later, Microsoft comes out with Windows, and the PC following picks up and says, oh, hey, look at this. And all the Mac guys are going, so?
I know.
Or that, it was actually Apple guys saying so, because we were using menu-driven programs, and we were using on the both the Apple II and the Apple II GS.
Right.
Got the GUI interface first.
Yeah, the Apple II GS was a fantastic computer, and it felt very much like the Macintosh. It was very similar to that.
Yeah, there was a lot of Mac blood in that, because of the lease that came out and really didn't catch on, because most people didn't know what to do with it. Plus, it was priced out of everybody's reach.
Yeah.
But when it found its way into the heart of the affordable Apples, the GUI took off by storm. and that paved the way for the Mac that we all know and love.
Yeah.
And then, as Windows progressed, and it always kind of bothered me a little bit that they used the term Windows, because we had Windows first.
Right.
But nevertheless, when Microsoft came out with their OS that used the graphic user interface, the generic term there.
That's fair enough.
The PC world kind of said, well, this isn't so bad. Well, I guess it wasn't so bad because it was pretty clunky at first.
Right.
When it started to smooth out and became more and more like a Mac, they finally said, look, we've got Windows XP. And when I saw Windows XP, there were two things that struck me about it. One, that it was actually probably the most stable OS that Microsoft came out with.
Yeah.
It was predictable in its reaction to network interaction. That was a favorite of mine. And then finally, it responded like a Mac.
Right, yeah. Well, that was kind of the first usable OS that they made. I mean, like, really usable. Like, you could sit down and actually work at it and just kind of almost feel like it was invisible, like you didn't have to think too hard about what you were doing. And it was, I think that might be the only OS from Microsoft I actually had ever used, and that was like once at a cyber cafe in France because I needed to check my email and that's what they had up, so.
It was against your wishes, but you took it.
It was completely against my wishes, and to further complicate things, of course, the keyboards were all in French, so the semicolon was where the L should have been or something like that, but yeah, so that didn't help. But even so, I did take note that, well, you know, this XP is not as bad as you know, I think I had an experience with NT for a while as well at a job, and that was, luckily I only had to use a proprietary text-based database that they had running, so I never actually had to venture out into the GUI, but I do remember it, the NT being really, you know, pretty crazy.
Arcane would be a good word.
Arcane. So, but you've networked with, what, NT and XP, or just XP? What, I mean, like, in terms of setting up a network with Macs?
Well, probably, probably the best installation that encompassed several different, several different platforms was a small engineering firm that I networked out. There were the predominance of PCs on the network, but there were a couple of Apple diehards that were running Macs of the day.
That's cool.
And this is about 10, 15 years ago, I guess. And the boss of the network had installed an appliance to distribute DHCP IP addresses to the network and share the network connection outside the office. He quickly pointed out to me that, oh, this would not work with a Macintosh.
Oh, okay.
And I said, well, why won't it work with a Macintosh? Well, because Macs can't use the DHCP.
Oh, wow. Max couldn't use DHCP. Huh?
I was, you know, shocked and amazed. I said, gosh, I wish I'd known that on my last job. Otherwise, I wouldn't have set up the Montessori school with distributed network like that.
Right. Right. Because I'm pretty, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be using it right now if I knew that it couldn't use DHCP.
So he got his appliance installed, and he got all the PCs set up, and they said, I don't know how you're going to get those Macs to work, but you're going to have to do that because we committed to this, and so you got to make it work. And I don't know how. And I said, well, okay, give me a few minutes, and I'll go touch all the four or five Macintoshes that were in the office, and get them hooked up. Now, this is back in the day of it was called Mac IP, so they're running some pretty old OS. That was like probably Mac 7.5 or 8.
Now, was 7.5 the first one with IP proper? Was it all AppleTalk before that, or is AppleTalk IP? I don't know.
Oh no, AppleTalk is its own
Its own protocol.
Yeah, yeah.
But was 7... Like, when did the IP network ability, I guess, like, when did that come about? Or was that even before all of that?
If I recall correctly, and, somebody may write in and say, no, you got that wrong there, Gort, but I'm thinking it was 7.5, and that's, I have to go look at my notes, but 7.5, I seem to recall the Mac IP toolkit. And so I want to say 7.5. And then it only got better from there as far as just the ease of use. So in any case, you went around, you touched each one, you opened up a little DA and set up to pull the network and pull down a local IP address, and you were in business.
Oh, wow.
Oh, sure, it took a few minutes, you had to open up the DA and you had to click a few things, but for its day, it was no worse, and
right.
Certainly a lot easier.
Wow, is that your robot there, Gort?
Yeah, he's reminding me what time it is.
And it's midnight, your time. Wow, okay, people, that's how dedicated Gort is. He's up at midnight recording, talking about TCP IP.
Yeah, well, you know where my first love is.
Right. So, but the bottom line, if I'm understanding you, is that it was really kind of seamless to get the Windows and the Mac to talk to each other. Where was the magic? What's the magic? Is it the protocol? Is it the compute? The OS's? Where's...
The magic is that TCP/IP wasn't invented by Microsoft, and therefore it works with anything.
Right,
TCP
okay.
TCP/IP is TCP/IP, and that's all there is to it.
Gotcha. Very good. Hey, Gort, that music means we need to take a coffee break, so let's do it and meet back here in a minute.
Full-bodied, refreshing, hot coffee makes any type a pleasant interlude. Won't you have some now?
Well, you know what I've been doing, Gort? Of course, I don't have any of the interoperational tales that you've got. I do have some Unix tips about... It's a little bit of a networking hack, and it's called CUPS, which stands for the Common Unix Printing System, which, if I understand correctly, it's fairly recent. It's not... I mean, I'm not talking about 3 years ago, but I mean, I don't think it's been around since Unix was invented, for instance. But what it does is it enables, it helps the Unix systems print. Seems simple enough. And one of the cool things is that CUPS comes on the Mac OS, or it comes with the Mac OS out of the box. You've got it in your system. May not ever use it, may not know it's there, but it's there. And it is a surprisingly, amazingly powerful and stable little system, little program, that will help you network, set up a network printer, basically. Sort of a little, not a print server, but, network your printer.
So where does CUPS live?
Where I think it's in /usr/bin maybe, but it's in your system, and I'll tell you how to get there. If you open up your Safari or Firefox or whatever you're using these days, you can just type in http://127.0.0.1:631. So what we're doing there is
127.0.0.1:631.
So you're telling to look to itself at port 631.
Oh, look at there.
And that's where CUPS lives. Yeah, you see it, right? That's as easy as it is to get there. What you do then, you should see your printer listed there. I've got my internal modem listed, and I've got my PhotoSmart C3100 series little $100 HP printer listed. Now, the weird thing about the HP C3100 series that I got, it was only $100, and HP, and I called them to actually talk to them about this because I couldn't understand why I was hooking it up to my airport base station, and no matter what I did, I just couldn't add it to my printer and fax preference as a shared printer, which is as easy as it's supposed to be, typically. You just add it as a shared printer, and it pops up in every print dialog box, you know, from then on. But the HP had disabled that ability in their printer. They broke it so that it would not network, so that you would have to buy the model up.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And yeah, I verified this with HP. They didn't say it in so many words, but they, I mean, obviously a USB printer is a USB printer, and it shouldn't need any special magic to plug into a USB port on your airport base station. That's not supposed to work that way. So finally, I sat down and decided to get this thing working, and I figured, well, I might as well try cups. And so what you do is you click on the Modify Printer button there in cups, and it takes you through some dialogue. It will make you sign in, I think, as your administrator, if you're not already signed in as the administrator. And it'll ask you for the location of the printer. And the location is simply the routing, your router's address. So on mine, certainly it's 10.0.11.
Look at that.
Huh. Yeah. So you set the location as 10.0.1.1, which is, I guess, typically that's the default location of a router, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then you click to continue, and then it asks you what device you want to set this as. Now, I had no idea what device I had from the cryptic list that it gives me, so I just put in generic USB, and wouldn't you know, Cups later on corrected it for me and told me, well, you've got an app socket / HP JetDirect. So that was great. Talk about user-friendly.
Yeah, there you go.
And then it asks you what the make of the printer is, and I told it, well, it's an HP, I knew that much. And then finally, it shows you all the different series of HPs that it knows of. I couldn't find the one that I had, so I put in HP New Desk Jet Series, Cups, version 1.1. I didn't know what I was doing. Wouldn't you know, I was right anyway. Just a generic kind of driver, I guess, that Cups would recognize. And from then on, I went back. After you continue to that, it gives you an option of printing a test page. And just not to rave too much, but of all the test pages I've printed from my consumer printers, and they have been many, with all the trouble I've had with my printers, this is the best test page I've ever seen. Oh. It gives you a very clear and obvious color wheel, and it labels what color is supposed to be there. And if you see, you know, G, and you see not green in that little space, then you know something's wrong with your ink. It gives you a degree of radial lines. It tells you what printer you're running, what page size your default page size is. It tells you what you printed using, that is, cups. It's just, I mean, it was the easiest thing in the world that I've ever done, and I was so happy. And I am no longer using HP drivers as such. I am using cups, and it works like a charm from all five or six of my computers.
How about that?
Yeah, it's a fantastic system. So easy to... And, of course, I should have mentioned, you have your printer plugged into your airport base station. That's where it is on the network, and that's why you're setting your address to 10.0.1.1. And, yeah, and it's totally seamless. I mean, once you set it up, you don't even realize you are using it anymore. It's just like it's just like normal. You go to your program... You say print, you select the PhotoSmart 3100 or whatever printer you own, and the printer just spits it out. It's just, you don't have to go back to cups, you don't have to think about cups ever again. It's just the easiest and most transparent thing.
Well, very good, very good. I'm while you're talking here, I'm clicking around, looking at my admin for my printer, my Stylus CX3200, and, When I rearrange the office, I can have my printer wireless.
So, Gort, you're fresh out of the battlefield, having some issues or some encounters with Vista. What you were telling me about some implementation of this. What's going on with that?
They changed some router stuff in my building, and I said, "So, what's a prognosis of Vista coming down the line and really screwing things up for you?" And so it's already happened. Over in the other building where I work, another administrator contract, they have gone to Vista. They have deployed it into the cubes.
Wow.
And people are, they're lost. And I said, "Well, why would they be lost?" And he said, "Oh, it's totally different. It's totally different. It's just all different. You know, it's just too bloated. It's in an old computer. It's really slow. There's some that it won't even run on. And a lot of people just don't like the interface. They want it to go back to XP. So what I do is I use the other skins to make it look like XP."
Oh, that's funny. That's very funny.
He takes all the stuff and takes all the guts out of Vista and makes it look like XP, and everyone's happy.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm telling. I know that the future of the death of Microsoft is just skinning a Linux distro like XP and just not telling anyone. You know, it'll just be like, "Oh, cool," you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess the flip side of that is the people that have XP and they say, "Oh man, I really want Vista." Okay, so the IT goes out. The IT guy goes out and gets a set of skins to make it look like Vista.
Yeah, really.
And really, it's XP with a Vista skin.
That's a funny story. Even outside of Vista versus XP versus Linux versus anything, it's just a funny story to show how most end users that we encounter. That's computing for them. Like, what does it look like? And yeah. Where's the one application that I need?
Right, exactly.
And that's the extent of it.
Yeah, one of the things that I was saying about the thin client was actually the fact that a lot of people only use one or two programs, and that's all they need installed.
Oh, that's true.
And that's a lot of reason why some of the big enterprises have gone to a thin client. They look at a particular work group and they say, "Okay, all these guys really need is Excel and Word and Outlook for email."
I read an article in I think it was Linux Journal or something, and it was kind of a review of thin clients. And the guy was saying how successfully it had been deployed in the school that he was networking, And he said that the first semester he made the mistake of basically just doing what I guess you would do and just throw in last year or, 3 years ago, those computers, use them as your thin clients, have the big fancy server room for yourself, and you're administering everything there and everything works. But to the end user, who, like you're saying, just care about, "Hey, does it look like this or does it look like that?" They think that they have like the world's worst computers because they're looking at something that looks to them like 3 years old computers,
Yeah.
That have been gutted out, and they're just like, "Oh man, this is terrible." And, it ends. And he said that the next semester he just kind of like did some set dressing, covered up the actual CPU so no one ever saw the old box, gave them nice new monitors, the flat screens or whatever they need. And,
right.
and then it was like, "Oh, thank you so much for fixing the network." And nothing had changed. It was like everything was the same, but, Well, Gort, we have talked for a grand total of, 38, 40 minutes. Maybe we could call it a night. And hopefully this has been an informative 40 minutes for the listeners. Try out that cups trick. It's a great one. Avoid Vista. That's a really good idea, too. And tune in next week for more Mac hacks, more Mac apps, and cool and strange and unnatural Unix tricks. If you want to check out our website, it's thebadapples.info, or you can go to thebadapples.5gbfree.com, where you will find a free wallpaper, free desktop art for your computer, and show notes and links to all the things that we've talked about. contents of this podcast is covered under some form of Creative Commons license or GPL thing. You can use anything that we've talked about for your own purposes. You can modify it. You can redistribute it. No problem. If you need to email us, you can email us at gort.klaatu@gmail.com. That is Gort, G-O-R-T, dot Klaatu, K-L-A-A-T-U, @gmail.com. Talk to you next week.